welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast, the only podcast on this planet that is brought to you live and indirectly from Providence, Rhode Island, via Columbus, Ohio. I'm your host, John Orlando, and you know, that's a bold statement that I think is the only one on the planet that is emanating from two different cities, so to speak. But anyways, enough about my tagline that I say on every episode. Let's talk specifically about my guest for episode number 98. My guest is Mr. Luke Hare. Luke is a comic book writer. He is a podcast host. He is a graphic designer. He's probably most known for his run on Heroes International, which is a new comic book that just dropped from Legacy Rising Publishing, which is right here in Columbus, Ohio. I think the first issue just came out like a week or so ago. Issue 2 and 3 is coming up relatively soon as well. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the writing that Luke has done for various different blogs, such as The Content Farm and Dead Shirt and Nerdy with Children. We're going to talk about the Multiversal Q podcast. That's a tongue twister. Multiversal Q podcast that Luke is a host along with another gentleman by the name of Devin Warner, as they talk about a lot of different universes in the comic book world. And we'll talk about a couple of other things as well. So it's going to be a very interesting one. I think Luke is one of the more unique guests that I've had. He's just got a very dry sense of humor, a very sarcastic sense of humor. So I think you're in for a special treat on this episode of the PVD Cast. And I'm also going to just give him some props. Those folks that know me know I like to be prompt. I like to be sometimes early rather than late. We had recorded this podcast on August 10th. We had said that we would meet at 6:30. He actually got to the venue at 6, which I hadn't even left my home. So he gets to wear the badge of honor of being the only guest to beat me to the venue. So there you go. Luke didn't wear that badge of honor. But hey, before we get into my conversation with Luke, I'd like to talk a little bit about something that I was a part of this past Tuesday. And I had a blast doing it. I cannot wait to actually do it again, to be honest with you. I got the opportunity to be part of the Trivia Geeks podcast. Now, it's kind of a game show in podcast form, brought to you by Blazing Caribou Studios. And I went onto their Facebook page and submitted an application to be a guest. I was lucky enough to get picked. On Tuesday, August 9th, I was on the show. It was a really, really fun show. I had a great time doing it. It's basically answering various different trivia questions. Myself and Carrie, my partner, were victorious. I'm happy to say that. I know I tweeted a lot about how I was going to dismantle my opponent, T.S. Barnett, on that episode of Trivia Geeks. And by the way, TS was a pretty tough competitor. I cannot say that she did not give me a run for my money, because she certainly did. But at the end, I managed to emerge victorious. But enough about that. Let's not make it too serious. Let's just talk about that. It was a great time. It was very fun. I encourage you to check it out. And you can do so just by going to blazingcariboustudios.com. From there, there are links to all the other different avenues that you can listen to that podcast if you don't want to do it right there off their site. I know it's on iTunes. I know it's available through Stitcher Radio as well. So I think if you just go to either one of those apps and you search Trivia Geeks Podcast, you'll find it. Episode, I believe, 33 is the episode that I am on with T.S. Barnett. Again, check it out. And hey, if you get the opportunity to, I would say certainly follow those fine folks at Trivia Geeks Podcast. And if I recall correctly, which I do believe I recall correctly, as I was saying, you can follow them on Twitter simply by looking for at Trivia Geeks Show. That's at Trivia Geeks, plural, show on Twitter. They're also on Facebook, as I said. Just Google Trivia Geeks Podcast and you'll find it there. And definitely check out the episode. I will appreciate it. And follow them on Twitter as well. Hey, let's get right on into one other quick little bit of news, and then we're going to throw it to my conversation with Luke Hare. Hey, I've been rearranging some things in the house. Rearranging the office, redecorating a little bit, so to speak. I opened up a box of random toys, and I found a Transformer. That's right, I found Jazz in the package. It's the 1992, like, relaunch of those action figures. I found it in this random box. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with this action figure. In fact, to be honest with you, I'm not really a big Transformers guy. So, what am I going to do with it? Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take it on down to Big Fun Columbus. That's right. If you need a toy, whether you want to buy one or maybe sell one, you need to stop on down to 672 North High Street in Columbus and talk to the great guys and girls down at Big Fun Columbus. I mean, I'm going to see if they're interested in it and see what they can give me for it, and we'll just go from there. But hey, they got everything that you need in terms of your toys, whether you're talking about wrestling figures, He-Man, Gem, Strawberry Shortcake, G.I. Joe, whatever it is that you're looking for, they got it down at Big Fun Columbus. So just check them out online by going to facebook.com/BigFunColumbus or on Twitter at Big Fun Columbus. All right, now that I got those quick things out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, my conversation with Mr. Luke Hare. All right, welcome, folks, to another installment of the PVD Cast. John, sitting down here with Luke Hare. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. You know what? According to your website, I didn't do your introduction correctly. Isn't it supposed to be Luke Hare it is? Luke Hare it is?
Actually, Luke Hare it is.
Oh, yeah. Man. Sorry.
Boom, shaka, laka, shaka, laka, shaka, laka.
You know, I will also give you a compliment. You're the first guest that beat me to the venue. Ever. In 98 episodes, you've beat me to the venue. That rarely ever happens.
I enjoy being early to things. I think being punctual is a sign of
respect. I do too. I do too. But I want you to own that. You can own that.
Okay.
I would give you a trophy, but I don't. Jot it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so you're a writer, a colorist, host of a podcast, web guru, etc., etc. Did I miss any?
I game master a lot of role-playing game stuff.
Okay, all right. A man of many talents.
Yeah. Well, you like threw me for a loop there because you're like colorist. It's like, wait, what if I? Oh, and then Chris Haley, the guy who illustrates Let's Be Friends Again and who I did some internship stuff for, used to do like online coloring book pages, mm-hmm. and so I'd like mess around with those on a Friday night.
Okay, all right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you've dove into. Right now, you're working on Heroes International, which is Legacy Rising Publishing. So how did you get involved in that project?
So a friend of a friend who I met, his brother-in-law is Mike Watson.
Oh, okay.
So just through like mutual contacts, Mike ended up reading some of my stuff. Because we're both like in the Columbus area, mm-hmm. we'd see each other at shows, and so I initially started off as the editor for Vigilance and Heroes International, because I'm a big world-building guy.
Okay.
And then Micah, who's writing Vigilance, Mike wasn't entirely sure if Micah would be able to balance writing both of the series. He knew that I was giving him a lot of feedback on getting character voices, and like trying to build the backgrounds, and so he ended up giving Heroes International over to me.
Okay. And so far the run's been successful?
Well, the first issue came out last weekend over at Wizard World Columbus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Issue 2, the script is done. Quinn McGillan, who is the artist, is starting on the art. I'm currently working on issue 3, which is the most difficult book that I've ever written. I have like restarted and scrapped it several times from everything from actually having pages like noted down and then just going all the way back to start and being like, no, this does not work.
So, but was the first issue well received at Wizard World?
I don't know. The only like review set that I've seen so far has reviewed almost every comic except mine. And he's like had really harsh reviews on a lot of these books.
Okay.
And so I have checked the site so much that it is now like auto-completing.
Oh, man, really?
Yeah, and it's like, no, I want to see if I did a really shitty job. I want to know if, like, some of my deep, dark fears were true, and, well, they haven't revealed it yet, so.
All right. So, let's talk maybe a little bit. I don't know how much you can comment on this, but Legacy Rising is a new publishing company, imprint, if you will, here in town. So how is it working with those guys?
It is interesting.
Okay.
How so? Well, it started off where Mike and I had, like, started working together because he's been doing Hotshot for something like a decade now.
Yes.
And he's got all of his other projects and hustles that he's working on. And it was a point of, hey, I want this to be a full-time job. I was like, okay, I can help you with that. And so we were looking into business opportunities, getting loans and, grants and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then Doug Sims, who owns Heroes and Games at the Columbus Convention Center, wanted to start up a publishing house for comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of shifted into that gear, which cuts down on a lot of work on my part, which is nice.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Excellent. Well, let's talk about a couple of your other projects, one of which I have here with us, Senator Luchador.
Yes.
Which I enjoyed that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
I've particularly enjoyed that No was translated from Spanish.
Oh, yes. Several times.
Several times, which was very funny. I enjoyed it. So what was, if I may, what was the...
Inspiration,
yeah.
So Jeremy, the artist for that book, was actually the guy who got me into making comics way back in high school.
Okay.
Like, every day he'd bring in, like, 3 or 4 pages of comics that he had penciled, and like, be like, oh yeah, hey, I appeared in this one, that's awesome. Hey, I appeared in this one kissing a dude, that's not necessarily awesome. So it was like very weird comics. It was like called Random Acts Of, so it was like each issue was building into this massive epic. Like, if you ever read old school like web comics, where there was not a lot of planning, like, your Dominic Deegan, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Bringing back horrible memories for some people, at least. Like, it was like that. It was no overarching plan or no, like, thinking too far ahead. And so I got sort of doing a similar thing with a character named Carl, who was the Lord of Menial Labor. And that was also just really weird, deeply personal stuff.
Okay.
Because it was, like, I'd go to bed, and then I'd, like, draw 2 or 3 pages of my own, which were much, much worse looking.
Okay.
But, like, I was drawing 2 or 3 pages of comics each night, bringing them in, sharing them, getting feedback, and just telling my own really, really weird epic based on whatever was on my mind.
So, were you getting feedback from Jeremy alone, or other people?
Oh, no. There was, like 6 of us at the table who were, like, reading these comics.
Okay.
And so that actually got me... during my junior and senior year to go to a VoTech program to study graphic design, which eventually got me moving into web design because I really hated taking classes and lessons that I already learned in college all over again. College Luke was an idiot. Like, Luke up to maybe yesterday, maybe even up to like an hour ago, not the smartest guy, makes a lot of mistakes. But yeah, like, that got me started, and I eventually moved away, and when I came back, we ended up reconnecting, because Jeremy had somewhat fallen off making comics, and so I was like, hey, let's do a comic together. We had a few projects that really didn't go anywhere, and I was like, no, we should just get a mini done, get something good, and Jeremy had wanted to do something with, like, Mexican wrestlers. And
are you a fan of wrestling?
I am slowly becoming a wrestling fan.
Okay.
Like, I have a lot of friends who do podcasts or who are really into wrestling, so I've, like, started getting into Chikara.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like, I've got, like, King of Trios tickets and hotel and
all already
planned. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I got that.
I'm impressed. 3 months
back.
Okay.
Because, like, I went to their year-end show last year.
Oh, okay.
Like, anniversary.
Yeah.
May have not been that. It was like the season finale.
It had a different name. It wasn't Anniversary. Top Banana. Yes, thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Because they did all of the Arrested Development themed episodes last year.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and like that was great. And they had come to Columbus to do a show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But so like this was before I'd even really gotten
into wrestling. So that wasn't even part of the picture. Okay.
But it was like, let's look into luchadors. Because, like, there was that weird period in the 90s where, like, luchador culture was all over. Like, there was the live-action show on Fox Kids, Lucha Libre. There was, like, Mucha Lucha, the animated series.
Right.
And then, like, after I had stopped watching cartoons, I think there was, like, one or other two things that popped up. And it was like, oh, this is really interesting. And then I was, like, trying to look up interesting stories, and I came across one of those weird news stories that everyone covers where there was a Japanese masked wrestler who ran for city council.
Yep. The great Sasuke.
Yes.
Yep.
And the like week before he was going to start his term, they put in a new rule saying that you cannot wear hats or headgear.
Or masks or anything like that and serve, right, yeah.
Purposefully to stop him. And it was like, oh, well that is really, really awesome. And nobody covered what happened afterwards.
Right, I don't even know what happened.
Yeah, it was like,
they
wanted that first part, no one covered the second part, and I don't trust Google Translate to do a good enough job, so I'm left with a cliffhanger there. I hope things work out for him.
Hey, if anybody knows, by the way, if you're a listener and you know what happened with that, tweet me, alright, or shoot me an email, because I too have no idea what happened. I think he served, but I don't know if he was forced to unmask or not. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
anyways, but.
And so it was that whole idea of, well, you are the ideals that you represent instead of just being a man, because man is prone to failing and flaws and stuff. And so that was sort of the impetus for Senator Luchador. It was like crazy action, a senator who's also a luchador, and then just filling it up with another 8 pages of weirdness.
I would certainly vote for Senor Liberty if he ran for president.
Oh, no, I would vote for
right now, I would. I would even vote for the great Sasuke right now. Mm. Anyone other than the two that we're allowed to vote for. Anyways, but that's another tangent. Maybe.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, let's...
I'm tangenting enough as it is.
You also have another book, The Tomb of Naomi, which is kind of a goth kind of...
Yeah, it's an old-school gothic romantic horror story.
Yeah.
Because it's like most of the time when you're doing a gothic horror story or like a gothic romance piece, it usually just goes to Lovecraft territory, and that sort of ignores one of the old school ideas where it was, there is science behind these, like, weird things going on, and it's a lot about family relationships and those dynamics. And Sarah Delano, who is the artist who worked with me on that, who did a fantastic job, like, we were throwing together different, like, literally it was, we sat down on IM, and it's like, hey, I want to work with you. She wanted to work with me. So we did a game of you throw a genre, I throw a setting, I throw a setting, you throw a genre.
Yeah.
And, like, we came down to, like, this. There was another project that we had considered where it was going to be a cop story set in the Roman colonies in England that obviously ended up not happening. And so we ended up going with this one, The Tomb of Naomi, which is about a young woman who, her mom wants her to get married. She's got 3 rich suitors, and she does not like any of them. So she makes this plan based on the Arabian Nights story, The Tale of Shahrazad, where they're going to have this task, building a tomb for her father who recently died. And whoever, like, does it the best, she's going to marry them. And unfortunately, they tap into a natural fission reactor.
Oh.
And so they start dying of nuclear radiation.
Okay.
And obviously, she gets blamed for it.
Okay.
And so the whole family and everything starts to fall apart.
All right. Let's talk about. I think that's one of the things I appreciate about folks that are independent publishers is coming up with some ideas that normally you would not expect. If you went to the Laughing Ogre per se and you got comics on the rack, you probably would not expect to see something along those lines.
No, so, and for a while I was billing as a feminist gothic romance, and that got a few interesting looks, like at the extra space show that they did last year at the brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had gone away to get some food, and when I came back, there were these, like, six-year-old women, and they're like, oh, did you write this comic? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, we were expecting a woman to have written it. And it's like, yeah, whatever.
did you say, don't judge me? That's what I know. Don't judge me.
No.
Yeah, well, hey, whatever.
Life is what it is, what it is.
It is. There was another one of your projects. I'm not sure if the acronym is spelled out or if it's just said. ERAS Parish?
ERAS.
ERAS Parish. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure. And so ERAS Parish. So you want to tell the listeners a little bit, summarize about what that particular project was about?
Well, actually, it's part of a bigger anthology series.
Okay.
That sort of combines the idea behind Seven Soldiers of Victory and, like, Watchmen, where it's taking these old-school pulp characters and repurposing them. So, like, I was looking up, and I'm blanking on the guy's name because I have not written one of these in a while. I want to say it was Bob Haney or, like, another Bob. But he had, like, all these characters that, because the publishers failed, they fell into the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was going to be putting these characters together, and they're fighting the same enemy, and they're working together, and they're influencing each other's stories, but they never actually meet, and each story is set in a different decade.
Hmm.
So ERAS Parish, I believe, is the first one. ERAS Fung, which I'd also kickstarted and made some very, very poor choices. Around that time, that is finally getting released. I'm picking up the check so I can get that stuff mailed out later today, actually. That one is set... ERAS Parish is set during, like, the golden age of Hollywood, but also you've got the Depression hitting in.
Okay, the 1920s, 1930s era. Okay.
And so it's... I describe it as that movie The Artist, except a guy ends up boxing a Frankenstein at the end. It's that old school... guy at the top takes them into apprentice, and then when everything falls apart, they have to consider doing away with their ego or continuing to fail, and pride wins out.
So what did you use to help you guide while you were writing this? I mean, you talked about it's kind of a throwback to the pulp era. Did you do a lot of research and a lot of reading of those type of pulp comics and that, or
it's taking the characters but not necessarily the aesthetics. Like, the character who I used was Ted Parrish, the Man of a Thousand Faces.
Okay.
Who I read a few comics and they were, like, very, very racist.
Okay.
Like, it was, oh, I'm filming this movie right now. Oh no, Japanese spies are trying to attack. I'm going to put on this very racist-looking Japanese disguise that will definitely work and take them down. And it's like, okay.
That's okay. I mean, you look back and you wonder. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, like, what people were thinking. Uh-huh. As a side story, because it kind of does kind of tie in, I watched an old wrestling show from 1986, and there was a tag team that wrestled two just no-name guys. One named Bill Washington. The other one was a black African-American guy named El Negro. I'm like, really? His name was The Black? That's what they named him? Yeah. Really? That's not racist at all.
You know how sometimes you get a random thing stuck in your head for a while?
Sure. Yes.
So I'd been listening to the radio, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers song Around the World came on.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, they, like, swap out the last part of the verse with him scatting. But the guy scatting sounds like he's doing a Chinese, like, a racist Chinese impression. And literally what he's saying is, like, Xing Chong Bing Bong over and over. And it's like, okay, is there a story behind this? And it's like, yeah, he wanted to do something different. And originally they were going to take it out. And the guy's daughter really liked his racist scatting. And it's like, you're writing a song about how you love all the people in the world and how it's so beautiful, and then you're dropping the horribly racist inadvertent impression. I'll say that it's not purposeful.
Yeah.
But it's like, this would not have flown.
What are you going to do?
Mid-90s.
Let's talk about two other projects. Social Fist?
That was like the...
Because that has done its run, if I'm correct, right? You kind of have wrapped up that particular project, or no?
I don't have the money to get that thing going.
Oh, okay.
So back when I was studying graphic design, me and a friend were talking about doing a comic project because we had like tried entering in the VG Cats. Like they did a 1 year make your own comic contest. And we did not follow the rules on that, but we're like, hey, let's try and do something bigger, ridiculous. And so we went to the pool that so many like first-time comic creators go to, which is, let's do a superhero parody. I wasn't reading superhero comics at the time, so it was based on like the same stuff that everyone else does.
Okay, gotcha.
And so at first it was Super Feudo Communist Russia Team Squad Now. Or SFC or TSN. I've got that down to an art, pronouncing all of that. And so we just came up with all these really crazy characters, and it didn't really go anywhere beyond sketches because I did not know how to work well with other people. And so then in college, when I had a very low income, it was like, oh, you know, it'd be awesome if I try and get this comic going because I really want to do a comic. And so the first artist, Iori, I-O-R-I, like, we were working on an initial version that was still very jokey and humorous, and then, like, he had other projects come up, and so I found another artist, Remus Perzianu, who now goes by Rimbrew, who did the really good illustrations for James Asmus's comic, The End Times with Brahmin Ben.
Okay.
But like he and I started working, and then James Asmus stole him with things like a livable page rate.
You know, it's funny how the money and bills will influence people's thinking.
It's like I don't necessarily have the money to pay him 10 times the initial rate that I was paying, so like that's forestalled, but we got 3 issues worth of pages done.
So in the middle there, you said you always really, really wanted to do a comic book. So it's safe to say that you've been a fan of comics.
Yes.
You don't sound very enthusiastic about that. Did you read them for a while and then step away from them and then get back to them and then step away from them again? Or is it kind of one of those type of deals? Or
I grew up like watching superhero shows when those were on, but like the comics that we had were newspaper comics. So you're like Dilbert, your Far Side, like Calvin and Hobbes, and that sort of stuff. And so that was what a comic book was to me. It was like I never really saw them at the store. I never really got them and like read them until high school.
Okay,
where like I read Watchmen because that's what everyone reads. I had gotten into web comics like shortly before then.
Okay.
And then it was like the store where I was playing Magic the Gathering back when I was still spending way too much money on that. Like I ended up winning a tournament and it was like, I don't want to get more Magic cards. I want to like get something different. I want to get comics. And so on the racks there was a comic with a title that intrigued me because it was patently ridiculous. And do you want to guess what it is?
The comic that was on the...
Yeah, this would have been around 2006, 2007.
And it's the title that caught your eyes. Yes, that eliminates some of the early 90s image stuff. I'm going to go with 2006, Civil War?
No.
I don't know.
Lobster Johnson.
I will confess, I'm not familiar with Lobster Johnson.
It is a Hellboy spinoff series.
Okay, all right.
Lobster Johnson and the Iron Prometheus.
Okay.
So that got me reading like all the Hellboy back issues that I could pick up there.
Yeah.
Like getting them out of the dollar bin and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college, I actually started working at a comic shop for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I had a pull list.
Mm-hmm.
The comic shop I worked at never actually gave me a discount, so I ended up going to another comic shop. That was a whole nother thing, but like that was the point where I started regularly reading comics.
So who's some of your favorite characters to read?
I'm a writer more than a character guy. Like
yeah, same here. I'll follow writers more so than characters. I'm more that way too. So who are some of the writers you enjoy?
Jeff Parker is one of my favorites.
Okay. Right.
Like I think he is horribly underrated for the amount of quality work that he does.
Okay.
like, especially those, like, all ages Avengers books that he was writing were fantastic. I'm a Morrison guy.
Oh, okay.
So I like more Grant Morrison. Warren Ellis here and there. I like when he's not too...
He's pretentious.
Yeah,
sometimes he's pretentious as all get out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, those are my big people right now. I have really been enjoying Al Ewing.
Okay.
He's doing a lot of stuff for Marvel, but he started off doing Zombo for, like, 2000 AD, I think it was.
I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with the name, but I haven't read any of his stuff.
Neither have I, but I've heard really good things, and I've also heard that it was so prescient that he really doesn't want to do anything more because he doesn't think he can top what's actually happening in current events.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But, like, Al Ewing stuff, I am buying, like, all of his Marvel stuff that he gets. It's been a hoot. Contest of Champions was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
New Avengers is a lot of fun. Ultimates is, like, all of the books, they're different in, like, tone, character setup, and even, like, storytelling arcs.
The one I want to check out, and I've also changed the way in which I buy comics, because I buy collections now, because it's just easier than buying single issues, but I've heard very good things about The Vision, and I so want to check that out.
I've heard good things about it. I've heard, like, other issues about it. I haven't checked it out, but, like, I do the morally gray thing of, like, me and three other friends all share Marvel accounts, so it's like, we generally don't buy the same books. Like, me and another friend are both buying Miss Marvel, but that's because we both enjoy that enough to buy, and then I just pass off my codes to other people.
Okay. Yeah, but that's definitely one of the ones that I want to check out here coming out soon. So, what did you like about it? Because I was a big Warren Ellis fan, too, especially during Transmetropolitan, which I think is just one of the greatest stories ever told. And just so crazy that so many of the things that he mentioned has happened.
Yes.
You know?
Next Wave sold me on him.
Oh, yeah. So, Warren Ellis is a top-notch, but I agree. At times, he can be a little full of himself.
Yeah.
All right, so one other project here. Is it Changeling?
Yeah, Changeling.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. Can you give a brief summary of that project?
Yeah. It's very, very different depending on how I'm trying to sell it. Because the first arc is, you know how in, like, Scooby-Doo, they'd be driving in the woods at night, guy in the ghost costume jumps out, they slam on the brakes, and they're like, oh, we've got a mystery to solve.
Right.
The first one starts off with some guys who've been drinking, they're in a rush to get in a party. They kill the guy in the ghost costume, so his ghost in a ghost costume is now haunting their van, and they have the insurance fallout. And so they get a call in from Jeff Siebert, who is the paranormal insurance adjuster.
Okay.
Has to figure out if it was a pre-existing ghost or what's going on.
Those damn insurance companies.
Yeah. And he ends up dying at the end of the first chapter.
Okay.
And so the second chapter is a flashback to earlier days, so you find how he gets to the town, and then it turns out that he also dies. And that one, because there are infinite Jeff Sieberts in the universe.
Oh, okay, all right.
And so it turns into sort of a whatever we wanted to parody or homage. So the first one is that weird Scooby-Doo take. The second one is like an origin story montage. And then the third one was like a Doctor Who parody.
Okay, all right. I've noticed that you do enjoy a good parody, because it seems that some of your projects have been that way. You've written a couple articles for the blog, The Content Farm, which is very kind of tongue-in-cheek and parody-like, too.
Yeah.
So have you always been, I guess you could say, enamored with that type of sense of humor, or...?
My parents made the mistake of getting me, like, Onion collections early.
There you go.
And,
okay.
I was raised in a very sarcastic house.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So you also are the host of the Multiversal Q podcast, along with your host, Devin.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about that particular podcast. What can someone expect if they go over to your website or check it out on iTunes or wherever it's available at? What could they expect in an episode?
Well, Multiversal Q is your guide to comic book multiverse. Now in podcast form. And the base of it is us taking a different universe or a few universes, depending, and going over the stories that they appear in. Most of the time, it's a story recap, and then we rank the universes from best to worst.
Okay.
We also have sort of expanded what we do on the podcast, so we'll do role-playing game episodes, because the live play thing is fun. It gets me something more interesting to edit and plan for.
Okay.
We also get in my friend Shannon, who hosts the YouTube channel Strucci Movies, to talk about superhero films most of the time, which I regret making her see. And, well, especially recently.
Well, you know what? I guess we could talk about that. I know that you and Shannon were incredibly harsh on Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I think I'm the only comic book geek that didn't really absolutely loathe it.
I have enough people in my Facebook thread who I've had to stop responding. It's like, no, I'm not going to talk to my racist relative. I'm not going to talk to my friend's racist relative. I'm not going to talk about, like, movies or things that I disagree with, because, like, it's very hard to have.
Yeah, I think there was problems with the movie, don't get me wrong, but I didn't think it was that. I didn't think it was as bad as everybody's just ragging on it. I don't know, maybe that's just me.
I noticed a whole bunch of story issues, and it's one of those things where the more I think about it, the more it just doesn't hold up to scrutiny.
I mean, I will say that you did comment that it was better than Batman v Superman.
Oh, yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah.
There's no argument there on that one. But
I think there's this level of tribalism when it comes to a lot of superhero media where
sure.
It's finally like getting in the big spotlight. And there's this belief that, oh, Marvel and DC still have this rivalry that critics care about. They don't give a shit.
No.
Yeah. Sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, go right ahead. We don't care.
Yeah. And it's dumb because it's like the same types of people who are complaining that like critics are biased were also the same type of people who were ragging on the new Ghostbusters movie and giving it negative reviews before they even saw it.
Right, right.
And it's just this very toxic...
Do you think, if I throw out this opinion, do you think DC makes better television shows than Marvel does?
I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not a good show. I think the Netflix stuff is a lot better.
Yes.
Because it's allowed to tell a single narrative and they're able to have more control over the episodes, even though they can get very round in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think part of it's you consume them very differently.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think that there's, in the Netflix... episodes of Daredevil, Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a depth with the characters where I always felt with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, I don't care about any of these people.
Oh, yeah, no.
There's no, I don't care. I don't give a shit what happens to them all. They can all die for all I care. You know?
Devin is a big supporter of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I know Mike Watson is a decent supporter of it, but, like, the DC shows are so much more entertaining because they have fun.
Right.
They're not afraid to be superhero things, which I think is the same problem that I have with a lot of the DC movies, ironically, where they don't have fun or they try and take themselves too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was the thing with Suicide Squad. It was like, oh yeah, we're going to try and be fun. We're going to try and like be...
quirky.
Like,
yeah.
I'd say like disruptive or like buck the system. It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if they get it together for Wonder Woman and or Justice League.
I think they've got the wrong person spearheading it, where we've had the era of the realistic Batman.
Sure.
And you can't really have that sort of thing if you're going to be bringing in other characters. Like, my personal favorite Batman media is Brave and the Bold.
Okay. All right.
Like, I happily bought that on DVD. Because, like, it has the ability to tell the darker stories, but you also have issues where people get turned into... Or you also have episodes where people get turned into gorillas, or you've got...
So there's weird stuff that's fun and entertaining. I get what you mean.
Because, like, DC is not just one universe. It's not just one story. It's not even just, like, three stories. Because in the same universe where you're trying to tell the Killing Joke, you've also got the stories where it's, like, you've got the... where you've got the middleman.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right, let's get back here to talking some more about the podcast real quick. I guess, what do you find is the biggest challenge of doing the podcast?
motivation sometimes.
Really? Okay.
We were supposed to tackle House of M this weekend, and that's not happening. Like, we had it planned in advance, and, like, last weekend was Wizard World, the weekend before was my sister's graduation from college, the weekend before I moved, and so it was like, in all of that, I was not able to read the stuff. We were actually supposed to do, like, House of M, I think, back in, like, April.
And it's life. It's life getting in the way of things.
Well, it's more of, I really don't want to read House of M. It's not worth discussing.
Let me guess, you didn't make that call to do House of M.
Oh, no, I did.
Oh, you did?
I did.
So you have no one to blame but yourself.
Well, we're trying to, like, cover the stories, because, like, every third episode, more or less, we're covering Exiles.
Okay.
And so we're trying to tackle the universes that get referenced before they show up in Exiles. So it was like,
okay. I see what you're talking
about. It was working really well for a while. Okay. And then we get to the World Tour arc where, did you ever read Exiles?
I did not, no.
Okay. The World Tour arc, they go to some of the really big worlds. And so it's like, this week, we've got House of M. Next, the next episode that we do is the new universe.
Okay.
So, like, the Jim Shooter created universe that flopped
miserably.
Yeah. After that, I think we've got, like, 2099, and it just keeps going on and on ad infinitum for a while until it slows down. I'm looking forward to that, but we've got, like, a string of really big episodes coming up. It's like House of M. I had started reading it. I read, like, the backstory stuff, and it's Age of Apocalypse, which I had never read before. That was
good.
Great to read.
That was
great
very
to
good.
Read.
I read that. I did not read House of M. You know, I'm familiar with what happens in it, but I did not read it. You know,
House of M is not, like, well constructed. Mm-hmm. It's not a good story.
Mm-hmm.
It does not deserve all the parts that it has. We'll do one episode of background, and then we're going to do one episode of very light world building. We're going to expect these other series to carry the weight, and they don't, because they don't build, like, a continuous universe. And then at the end, nothing that really happens in it matters.
Right, yeah.
Like, you're fine reading the first issue and the last issue where it's no more mutants.
Right, yeah.
And Hawkeye's back to life.
There you go. I read that you created a card game, Sentai Slasher Summer Camp.
Started
to create that, or is that completed, or?
It sort of became a multimedia project where I'm actually working with Jeremy on a comic version of it.
Okay.
And then the plan is, well, if the comic does well, we've also got a pitch for a board game.
Are you a fan of board games? I know you like role-playing games, but I mean...
Some of them. Sentinels of the Multiverse I really enjoy.
Okay.
That's like a collaborative superhero, not necessarily deck-building, but everyone has, like, a single contained deck that's pre-made.
That's not affiliated with DC or Marvel, correct?
Correct. Okay. It's their, like, own universe.
Their own universe, okay. All right. The anything else?
What's
your favorite role-playing game?
I've really been enjoying 13th Age recently. Like, that's what we're playing on our weekend campaign stuff.
Okay.
But, like, the old school 90s Marvel superheroes role-playing game with Phase Rip, which we use for most of the role-playing games, that is a very fun, simple, and stupid system.
Okay.
Because, like, there are still fan communities out there that are getting copies of the books since the rights have expired. They're, like, making more or less recent characters, and so that's easy, and that's why we like playing it on the game.
No Dungeons and Dragons? Yeah. The original, I think, old school RPG?
I started off, like, 3.5 D&D was my starting point.
Okay.
And I have fond memories of that. It was the people who I played it with.
Well,
and,
of course.
Like,
of course.
For a while, we were playing Pathfinder.
Okay.
And, like, Pathfinder is, like, 3.75, where you got expansions of a lot of stuff. But, like, 13th Age, I really like the way that it streamlines combat, because they have something called an escalation die.
Okay.
Where each round that you're in, you get a bonus to your attacks and checks and stuff.
Okay.
So you don't end up with that, no one can hit.
Yeah.
It's also, like, very easy and quick-based combat, because, like, the enemies always do the same amount of damage, so you aren't rolling dice for them. And everything is just streamlined in a good way, but also story-focused.
Okay, cool. So, I know that in some of the blogs that you've written for, including Nerd Scenarios. I can never say that word.
It's like mercenaries, but nerds.
I know. You know the other word I can never say that's on your website? What? Amalgam?
Amalgam.
Yeah, I can never say it. It's like, I don't know what the problem is. But anywho, so you've written many different blogs there, but I noticed that you had one on several on Deadshirt talking about movies. In particularly, one Fargo. Is that safe to say one of your favorite movies of all time?
Actually, I wrote that article because it was the first time that I had seen Fargo.
Right. But and has it become a favorite of yours, or?
I like it a lot, but like I'm very cautious about using the word favorite. It's like if I am talking about movies, it's like what is the best movie you've seen, and what is the favorite movie that you've seen. Because I think there should be a difference.
What is that difference in your mind?
So the best is, like, you think it deserves all the awards.
Okay.
You think that it's, like, an actual work of art. You think it's beautiful. You think it's flawless or near flawless. It's, if you had to show a person the ultimate summation of what movies can be, that's what you do. That's where you put in your pretentious answer, like, oh, well, I think Citizen Kane is the greatest movie ever made.
Right, okay.
Favorite is, like, the movie that you can watch again and again and again,
okay,
without getting tired of it. Like, there was a day when I worked at the comic shop where I watched Scott Pilgrim on loop for about 8 hours.
Okay.
And I did not get sick of it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So then what is your favorite movie? One that you could watch over and over
again. Yeah. Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe is my, like, go-to answer.
Okay.
But, like, Princess Bride is up there.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah, that's a classic.
And, that may be also in the running for best movie because it's just such a perfect congealment. There's no fat on it. And it's just, like, one of those movies that get you excited.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha. But you liked Fargo, nonetheless. To spoil that particular blog, not that I don't want people to go read it, but you enjoyed
Fargo. Yeah, no. Fargo is, like, a very well-crafted movie.
It is. I think it's probably, quite frankly, one of the best that the Coen brothers have done, I would go out and say.
Yeah.
Because I think that they've done some really good work, but I also, though, am somebody that thinks that they've done some work.
Oh, yeah,
work too.
Yeah.
I mean, Barton Fink, I think, was awful.
I have not seen that one.
No, I did not like it.
After Reading, I think, was a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess, too. Yeah, I agree. But then, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Really good. So, they're kind of all over the place. But, all right, as we're getting up to about the 45-minute mark, so anything else you wanted to throw out there? Did I miss anything in any of your projects or anything? I don't think so.
No, I mean, you got to most of the stuff. I've done production work for a few artists.
Yes.
Like musicians.
Mm-hmm.
I've booked concerts before.
Oh, okay. Around town here?
Back where I lived over in Pittsburgh.
Okay, all right. How did you find that? Did you find that challenging? Let me rephrase it. Did you find it challenging, or did you find it, like, a little bit more easier than, say, creating your own comic book?
A lot easier because they required a lot less of people. So when I was working at the comic shop, I'd gotten into a nerdcore artist named Adam Warrock.
Okay.
And he was starting his tour. He wanted to go to, like, a bunch of comic shops, like, do shows there because it's easy to get the word out. It's easy to get the audiences there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, like, tried to book him a show at the store, and my bosses, who no longer run a comic shop, it's now a Cash for Gold store because they were very bad at running a comic shop. Like, they said no. So it was like, oh, okay. Well, it is Halloween night. I'm working a comic shop. No one's coming in. Let's try and book a venue. I called up a venue. They're like, yeah, we can have them perform there. And
the rest is history, as
well,
they say?
2 days later, they called back and said, oh, we have another artist performing there that same night, would you mind, like, being the opening act? And it's like, not at all.
Yeah.
And I also worked with Akira the Don, who's a British rapper and producer who moved to the United States. And with that, I essentially came up with a business plan for him.
Okay.
And I got production credits.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nicely done. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the various different places where my listeners can check out your stuff.
Theoretically, I have a portfolio site at lukehair.com.
Correct.
That is very somewhat out of date. I've got to get around to updating that thing, which will probably happen when I get the Kickstarter stuff sent out. That way I can cross that off of my list of shame. And I can also start posting the pages there. And that's at lukehair, lukehair.com.
You also are on Twitter at, is it Coltreg?
Coltreg.
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 Coltreg, correct?
Correct.
All right. Is that a name that you came up with for your from your days of Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing? Or? No?
No.
Is this a personal story I shouldn't have asked?
Oh, no. It's not as bad as, like, my very first email address where I hated explaining the name for that.
Oh, no.
But no. I used to play Phantasy Star Online with friends.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, Oh, well, you can be big robot guys in there. And
yeah,
so I was
okay.
Like, what's something that sort of sounds like Voltron? And unfortunately, I've found out since then, there is a man named Cole Trigasques.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And
he's mad at you because you stole that from him.
No.
Twitter, didn't he?
I think he's like casually aware of me because we travel in sort of tangential circles. He's like a photographer and stuff.
Okay.
And so I figure sometime in the future he'll be like, oh, well, I'm going to be in his area. I'll need a photographer, so I'll
there you go.
Make it up to him then. Yeah, I'm at Coltreg. There's also Multiversal Q, the podcast,
correct,
which is at multiversalq.com.
You're also on Facebook, correct? Facebook.com.
Yeah,
But
yeah, Facebook, I'm...
As you've mentioned.
Social on there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's
if
like...
If you're a racist relative, he doesn't want to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things where I curate my people I contact with on there.
Sure, I understand. Yeah. No problem there. Alright, well, with that being said, Luke, thanks for coming on.
Yeah,
man.
No problem.
Alright, folks, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'm going to come back so I can wrap up this episode. So, if you will, please stick around. There you go, my conversation with Luke Hare, the man that is currently writing Heroes International for Legacy Rising Publishing. Check him out on Twitter, at Coltreg, which of course is spelled K-O-L-T-R-E-G. He also has his own website, which you heard us talk about, lukehare.com, which is L-U-K-E-H-E-R-R. And he is on Facebook, though. I think you found out that there's a lot of unique individuals that are pestering him on Facebook, but you can still hit him up there. Maybe, if you're not being a racist or you're not bashing comic book movies or discussing them, maybe he'll talk to you on Facebook. I don't know, but definitely check out Luke's work on Heroes International and as well of his many other projects like Senator Luchador and The Tomb of Naomi. All really good stuff. So, with that being said, I would like to be 100% honest, as I always am on my podcast, the PVD Cast. Recently, my contract with my web hosting provider, of course, Bluehost is who I'm talking about, had expired, and they had sent me a quote for renewing my subscription with them to be my web hosting service. And I'm going to be 100% honest, and when I looked at that price, I was like, wow, that's a little steep. That's more than I wanted to pay. You know what? I called them. And the fine folks at Bluehost worked with me. They gave me a couple different options. They gave me a couple different prices that I was a little more comfortable with. And let me just tell you, if you needed another reason to go to Bluehost, because you hear me talk about it all the time on this podcast, how great their customer service is, how competitive their pricing is, well, this story just shows you how gosh darn awesome they are. I'm 100% satisfied with them. I've been with them for 3 years. I'm going to be with them for another 3 years. And that should tell you something. If you know, a lot of people that know me know, you give me crappy service, you're done. Forget about it. I'm not going to give you my money. I'm not going to give you my time or my effort.
But Bluehost is not that company. I mean, think about it. How many times have you called a company or you've gone to a department store, whatever. You've gone to some business and you've complained about something and you know what they say? Too bad, man. Deal with it. Not Bluehost. As I said in my story, they worked with me. I got a price point that I'm very happy with. And again, I cannot tell you how awesome the service has been. Whenever there's been a problem, it's fixed like that right away. So if you need some web hosting for whatever website you have, whether it's a personal blog, whether it's something for your business, whatever it is, you need to check out Bluehost.com. They will give you all the details on that website, Bluehost.com. Again, I'm going to say it for the third time, Bluehost.com is where you need to go for some great web hosting services. Now that that's out of the way, it's time. Oh yeah, you can hear the music. It's time for Orlando Space and Orlando Hates. All right. That's right. You're getting a little dash of Orlando Hates because I just got to rant and rave about something, get it off my chest. But let's talk about my fave for this episode of the PVD cast. It's a movie. I just recently watched it on Netflix. I really, really wanted to see this movie when it came out in theaters, but I did not get a chance to. It came out in 2015, and I just found out that it was added to Netflix, so I sat down and watched it last week. The movie is called Dope, and it's a coming-of-age tale of a young African-American fellow who is kind of more nerdy. As the narrator says, he does, quote, white shit, end quote, such as riding skateboards, collecting manga comics, filling out applications for college. That's just a little bit of the humor that you get in this movie, but I really enjoyed it. It's a great twist on the coming-of-age tale that we've seen many times with teenagers, but it's got a unique twist to it. Killer soundtrack. It's all 90s hip-hop. It's phenomenal. I highly recommend it. So my fave for this edition of the PVD cast is the movie Dope. And now for Orlando Hates. Also a movie that I recently saw. And I had high hopes for this movie, and then they just fell apart as I watched this absolute train wreck of a movie. The movie that I'm referring to is the 2011 film called Shame, directed by Steve McQueen, the African-American director who did 12 Years a Slave, starring Michael Fassbender and Carey Mulligan. The basic plot is that Michael Fassbender plays a gentleman named Brandon who has a sex addiction, and that his sister, played by Carey Mulligan, has to move in with him. And I was very interested in this movie because I wanted to see the dynamic of the two characters, of the brother and the sister, as the character Brandon deals with this addiction to sex. But the problem is that I think when you have a character that has an addiction, you know, whether it's alcohol or sex or drugs or whatever, there has to be a small fraction of them that is likable. Brandon is totally unlikable. Carey Mulligan's character of the sister is unlikable and fucking annoying. And there's even other fringe characters that are just absolute rotten individuals. The movie itself was terrible. Not worth the time or energy for you to watch it. So I just gotta say, my subject of Orlando Hates for this episode of the PVD cast is the film Shame. Just don't even bother, folks. It's really, really bad. So, okay. So here's the part of the podcast where I let you know where you can get in touch with me, where you could tell me that I'm dead wrong about the movie Dope, or that I'm right about it, or that I'm dead wrong about the movie Shame, or I'm right on the money, or just make a general comment about this particular episode. You can do it a various different ways. If you'd like to tweet me, you can. I am over on Twitter, at PVDMVP. I am also on Instagram at PVDMVP, and you can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Don't forget that the pvdcast.com website is the official online home of yours truly, and that is where the PVDcast is, right there on pvdcast.com. But you can also get it through the Stitcher Radio app. You can stream it, or you can download it, or you can listen to it and download it on SoundCloud. So just a couple different ways that you can get your fix of this podcast. Hey, don't forget, please tell a friend. Let them know about this podcast, because I would greatly appreciate it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm off. I will talk at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening.